I'll start things off by saying I find it extremely strange to intro a video without being like, welcome to FC this or FIFA or career mode, because that's basically the only type of content I've been doing for the past 2 years on my channel. But I guess this is more of a welcome to something new, welcome to something different, and welcome to the Real Football Talk podcast. Yes, we are launching a podcast today for the very first time on YouTube and on Spotify. Now, I don't know if I can officially call myself a podcaster, or is the term podder? Yeah. Or hey, check out my pod. That sounds pretty sick to say, by the way. But yes, Real Football Talk podcast. We will be discussing real life football apart from, you know, the whole FIFA and career mode and virtual football that we all have come to know and love. This will be a bit more serious. You can see I'm sitting down for one. Yeah. Whereas I'm normally standing up and all hyped up. I hope I can be a bit more calm, a bit more relaxed. But listen, if I lose my mind, then that's just who I am. Yeah. But if you're going to enjoy this, please do drop a like on it and subscribe if you are on YouTube. I don't know what you guys have to do on Spotify. Just get involved. Yeah. Do you like a video? Is it an audio? I don't know. Listen, press the button on Spotify. Yeah. Press a link. You'll find us there. Get involved. But welcome to Real Football Talk. Now, podcast is something I've been thinking about for the best part of a year. It's something I've always wanted to do, especially a football podcast where we could discuss real life football. Because although most of you guys probably watching this and who are subscribed to my YouTube channel have gotten exposed to me through FC or FIFA, right? Although we use that game to express ourselves, I think that's because deep down we are all football fan. So I was like, hey, let's actually talk about the sport we all know and love. And here we are. Now, we are recording this on a Monday morning on the 2nd of September, and the podcast is scheduled to be out today. So it'll be a weekly pod every Monday. Yeah, we'll be covering the happenings over the past weekend, what to look forward to in the upcoming week, you know, the hottest trends and topics within football itself, what's grabbing the headlines, my perspective of things, so on and so forth. Today, I'm just by myself, but in the future, we'll definitely be bringing on guests to get a broader perspective on football, to understand how other fans are seeing it. Because, of course, everybody has biases, and I do as well. I have a liking of certain teams. I have a team I support, so on and so forth. But I want to bring on people that may even challenge my point of view, challenge my perspective of things, and just to show me the other side of the coin, you know. But today is a bit of an intro pod, I guess, to my perspective of football, how I've experienced it. We will touch on some of the things that have happened as well throughout the new season. The 2024-2025 season is officially underway. It is the beginning of the international break, though, but I don't think anybody is really looking forward to seeing international football right now, especially considering that we recently just had the Euros and the Copa America. So it feels a bit pointless. 3 games into most of the top leagues. And yeah, we'll cover some of the most outstanding results in that regard as well. You know, the Champions League, Europa League, and Conference League draws have been made as well. The new formats, we'll go through that as well. But overall, it should be pretty good. So make sure to stick around. Considering that this is the first time that we actually have a conversation, right, where we have a sit down one-to-one, where there isn't any gameplay, there isn't any music, it's not a case of me commentating or reacting to gameplay, I think we can get a bit more personal and actually talk, because I don't think we've had the platform to do that before, right? So I just want to share a bit more about myself here to you guys as well. And starting off with my first footballing memory. I'd say my first football memory would be the 2006 World Cup in Germany. I'd say that's the first time I remember seeing football on TV, was the opening ceremony specifically of the 2006 World Cup. At the time, I was 6 years old. And for some of you guys, that may be late, because I'm sure some of you guys would have gotten into football at an earlier age. But it's just a case of my family were never really into football like that. They just were never really into football, but it's a World Cup. So everybody watches the World Cup, right? And at the time, I thought that was the only kind of football there was, like international football, the World Cup, right? And I remember seeing Germany. I can't remember who they were playing. I think they absolutely destroyed them, right? I could check that up now, but, you know, I'm just going to keep this as authentic as possible. You know, as a six-year-old, Germany, you know, playing in a white kit and just smashing somebody, right? That's my first memory. And throughout the tournament, I took a liking to the Italians, right? And that was the first time where I actually started supporting a football team. It was Italy. And I'm not going to sit here and try to come up with some fancy reason for why I started supporting them. I genuinely believe it was a case of, you know, when kids are watching any competitive event where there are two opposing sides, right? There's that thing where it's like, who do you think is going to win? Or who are you pulling for? I honestly think that was how it started. It was a case of, I watched an Italy game. I was like, well, I kind of hope they win. And they won. And I was like, oh, well, would you look at that? I guess that's my team now, right? And I think it helped that they went on to actually win the World Cup in 2006. I remember watching the final against France. I remember the Zidane headbutt on Materazzi. That, yeah, stood out to me as well, because I was like, did he just headbutt him? You know, at the time, I was really much into like pro wrestling, right? And watching the WWE. And I was like, hold on, are the two worlds colliding here? What's happening? But of course not. But yeah, that's like my earliest football memory. But then because my family wasn't really into football like that, as soon as the World Cup ended, there was no more football for me, right? And I'd say the next time I really watched football, I'd see football here and there, but actually watched football will probably be like the Confederations Cup leading up to the World Cup in 2010. So like 3 years later or something like that. Funny enough, the World Cup was going to be held in South Africa, right? I am from South Africa, right? And that was a pretty big deal. At the time, I didn't know this. At the time, I honestly didn't. But that was a pretty big deal. And leading up to that again, you know, Italy, looking out for them, they didn't do so well. But anyway, soon as the World Cup ended, I was like, okay, I was hearing throughout the tournament about all these clubs that players play for. And at the time, I was a bit older. I'm like 10 years old, right? Now I got to understand that you don't just play international football. There's club football as well, right? So I was like, hey, okay, I need to find an Italian club. And the problem was at the time, I didn't really have access to Serie A football, right? So the closest thing I had to it was probably playing FIFA, right? So I'd go there, you know how you pick the nationality at the top, then you pick the league, then you pick the team, right? I was like, Italy, Serie A, and then I found myself liking Milan, AC Milan, right? So I guess they were my first love in a sense of like a club, right? Milan, growing up, researching about them more, searching them on YouTube, actually immersing myself in the team, Milanista, everything, you know? But didn't really have much access to Serie A, so I couldn't really watch Milan games as much as I would have liked to. However, did have access to the Premier League, and I was like, okay, I guess this is on regularly. There's always football. So I was like, oh, maybe let's just check this out and see what's happening here. Started watching the Premier League. And of course, it's inevitable for you to want something to get behind, a team to support, to be that much more invested. And then I fell into the rabbit hole that is Tottenham Hotspur. Yeah. Again, no fancy reason as to why I started supporting them. It really was a case of I was hearing about Manchester City, you know, Leicester City, Manchester United, Sheffield United, Leeds United. I was like, okay, fam, there are too many Uniteds and cities. What's a Hotspur? You know, who are you guys? Why are you different? And I liked the white kit as well. And I was like, okay, cool. I guess they sound cool. Tottenham Hotspur. It's very different, you know, from the other team names. So that's how I was like, okay, I'll look out for them a bit more. And then that just had to coincide with the rise of Gareth Bale at the time. So we're talking around 2011, 2012. heading into 2013, you know, it got a bit mad. So I'd say the first season where I would say I was a Tottenham fan was probably the last season of Gareth Bale, where he absolutely tore the league apart, right? So that's how I'd say I got into football that way. And then soon after that, finally got access to Serie A. And then I've always had this thing of, you know, Milan, Tottenham. Milan are kind of like my first love, but Tottenham are the one that I got very much invested in most because I had most access to, which is a very weird thing. But yeah, yeah. There are other teams that I do like. Of course, I like Bayer Leverkusen. I like Ajax. I like Benfica. You know, there are other teams I like as well. There is a team that I started liking for an even more odd reason. And this is going to be a bit of a quiz for you guys to see who can actually figure this out. Now, this team in particular is not a first division team as of now, right? So in the 2024-2025 season, they are not a first division team. I'll even give it to you. They are a second division team in their league. Now, the reason they stood out to me was they were formed on my birthday. Now, none of you guys know when my birthday is, but they were formed on my birthday. But what took it home for me was that the only top division league title they won was in the year I was born in. And I was like, okay, we may have to get involved because, you know, I'll say this as well. It's a country where I didn't really have a team I supported per se. And then when I learned that, I was like, okay, I like this now, kind of like the stars aligning kind of thing. So if you guys can figure that out, I'll give you like a virtual hug and let me know in the comment section. But that's enough about me. Let's actually get into the 2024-25 season here. What has been happening and what has happened recently is the transfer window has closed. I think it's now 3 days ago or something like that. And I have the top 50 transfers as for Transfermarkt of the 2024-2025 summer transfer window. And we're just going to quickly go through. I'm not going to go through every single one of them. I'm just going to go through the ones that really stood out to me, what I think about them, and just to get an idea of what you guys think about them as well. And to also get the order of them, because they're not ordered in terms of market value, not in terms of transfer fees. I mean, the top one is a free transfer, and we all know which one that is, right? So I don't know what the order is exactly here, but the number one transfer of this season has, of course, been Kylian Mbappe to Real Madrid on a free transfer. And it hasn't looked great, has it? He hasn't had the impact that most people, probably more specifically Real Madrid fans, would have hoped he had had. Because Madrid were playing Real Betis yesterday. I didn't watch the full game. I honestly don't know what the final score was. But even then, man, he didn't look too impressive. He didn't look too impressive in the previous two games either. Is it just the case of it's inevitable he will click into gear, or is this going to be another Eden Hazard situation? For the sake of him, I hope not. I think it's inevitable, you know. I think it's just a case of how do you fit him, Vinicius, Rodrigo, Bellingham. I guess now they signed that Endrick all into the same team. How does that actually work? You're going to have to sacrifice someone there. You're going to have to sacrifice someone, not necessarily in terms of having to sell someone, but in terms of building the attack around someone, because it's obvious that last season, that attack was very much built around Jude Bellingham. And the number one sacrifice in the attack was Rodrigo. Someone's going to have to be sacrificed because, yeah, although it says a free transfer, we all know it was definitely not free. And if you probably look at the wage he's on, yeah, he needs to start clicking. And the second transfer here, interestingly enough, is another one to La Liga, this time from the Premier League. It's Julian Alvarez from Manchester City to Atletico de Madrid, and they signed him for 75 million euros. I know there's that whole thing of add-ons and whatever. I don't think those are included in the fees here, but Julian Alvarez is a player that I rate very highly. Again, I don't think he's had the best of starts to life in Madrid either. But yeah, he basically is the second coming of Aguero, isn't he? He is. Is he as much of a clinical finisher? Not now. Not now. He is 24, though. He is 24. Technically, very good. I mean, the guy takes free kicks. He's a set-piece threat. You know, he can carry the ball well. He can link up play. You know, and moving to La Liga is very good for him because I think for his style and his stature, he'd fit in perfectly. Will he fit in perfectly for Diego Simeone? I don't know. I don't know. Honestly, I would have liked to see him at Barcelona. I think that's the kind of striker they need. You know, he very much can be in that David Villa kind of mold. You know, he can definitely play the false nine mold. And also considering he came from Manchester City, that would have been a seamless transition. But I don't think Barcelona have 75 million euros to spend. Because if they did, I'm sure they would have been involved as well. The third transfer is Douglas Luiz. And this one is very surprising to me. Seeing a player go from a Champions League Premier League team and move away from the Premier League. Because let's be honest, man, the Premier League is not the Super League, okay? They offer the highest wages. They spend the most money. They generate the most money. And seeing a player, I mean, he's going to Juventus, right? Which is one of the biggest teams in the world and the biggest team in Italy, right? Fair enough. It's still a bit surprising, though, as you see players go from the likes of Juventus to Tottenham, for example, right? Seeing him go from a Champions League team in Aston Villa to Serie A is a bit surprising. But it's a good surprise, in my opinion, because I want all leagues to be as competitive as possible. And Douglas Luiz is a player I rate very highly, and he's made an impact already at Juventus. Juventus have started off very well. I don't think they've even conceded a goal so far this season. And they are one of the teams I'd say you should look out for, even in the Champions League. Thiago Motta really knows his stuff. And yeah, they're definitely going to be a threat to anybody they come up against. The fourth transfer is Matthias De Ligt. Didn't look good yesterday against Liverpool. Did not look good in his first start at Old Trafford. A player I rate very highly. A player that I honestly believe can still be one of the best centre-backs in the world. Still only 25 years old, 45 million to Manchester United. I get it, it's Man United. And if you think about it, this guy has probably played for the biggest club in each country. He's played for Ajax, he's played for Juve, he's played for Bayern, and now he's at United. I don't think United was the right move, though. I honestly don't. I think we very much have another Paul Pogba situation here where, yeah, the talent may just go down the drain. In fifth, we have Dominic Solanke to Tottenham Hotspur. I'm surprised this transfer is that high. In terms of the fee, it's 64.3 million euros. That's a lot of dough, bro. That's a lot of dough on a 26-year-old who's only had one outstanding season. It could be a one-off. It could be a one-off. He's only played one game and he got injured despite playing all games for Bournemouth last season. He got injured in his debut for Tottenham. Fantastic stuff. That's my club, ladies and gentlemen. That's my club. Next up, we have Leny Yoro of Man United. 62 million on an 18-year-old centre-back. Haven't seen much of him. I'm not going to comment on that, but that's a lot of dough, mate. That's a lot of dough. Up next, we have Pedro Neto, 60 million from Wolves to Chelsea. That's a transfer I wish Tottenham made, man. I'll be honest. He is electric. Has his injury problems, but when fit, Pedro Neto is, he's sensational. Absolutely sensational. Moussa Diaby going to the Saudi Pro League to get the bag. We have Dani Olmo, I guess Barcelona's biggest signing at 55 million euros. He had a very good Euros for Spain. Of course, they won the tournament as well. So good move for him. Surprising that Barca could even afford that kind of fee to RB Leipzig. We have Endrick, and I didn't realize this kid cost this much. 47 million. 47.5 million euros. Amen. Amen. I mean, in 2 or 3 years' time, if he's competing for the Ballon d'Or, then, you know, it'll be money well spent. But yeah, that's a big fee. Let's see if he will live up to that. To those who have seen him, what do you think of him? The only time I see this guy is when he's in black and white pictures on X. Yeah. That's the only time. And he's compared to Pele. That's it, bro. But apart from that, haven't seen much from him. João Neves to PSG for 59 million. He was at Benfica, wasn't he? Yeah, he's a little tenacious midfielder. I like him. I don't know if PSG have a plan, though, because they just buy everybody, bro. Have they finally sorted themselves out? Who knows? Amadou Onana for just under 60 million as well. 59.35 from Everton to Aston Villa. Aston Villa have done some very good business this season, in my opinion. They have done some very good business, and he is just one of those. Mikel Olise to Bayern Munich. Good move for him. Good move for Bayern. João Palhinha to Bayern Munich. Fantastic move for both parties as well. Although he is 29, 51 million euros. It's not astronomical. It's not an astronomical fee. I think they can get like a good 3 years out of him, especially for the position he plays. I think actually Palhinha can easily play until he's like 35 and still be up there. Because for me, in terms of being just an absolutely destroying juggernaut in that midfield, there are very few that do it as well as he does. He's extremely physical. He covers ground. You know, he's not fancy on the ball. He keeps it very simple. But you know why you bring in a guy like João Palhinha, and, you know, putting him next to a midfielder like Joshua Kimmich in there, you have the best of both worlds. You have the ball player, you have the destroyer, you have the physicality, you have the technical ability. João Palhinha is honestly one of my favorite players right now. We have Tim Koopmeiners to Juventus. Big move. A bit overpriced in my opinion at 54.7 million, but we'll see what he can do. João Felix to Chelsea. And Chelsea Football Club, man. Can we talk about them? Can we actually talk about these guys? I was watching the game against Wolves. I think they beat them 6-2, right? Last weekend in game week 2. And I saw them bring on Christopher Nkunku, Pedro Neto, and João Felix from the bench. These guys easily start for 95% of football clubs in the world. Yeah? And they're just like, from the bench, and they just signed Jadon Sancho. Bro, in terms of talent in the squad, it's unbelievable. But I mean, it's inevitable when you're signing 60 players in about 2 seasons. It's inevitable that you are going to have some good players in there. But my goodness, they could beat anybody, but then they could lose to anybody. It's weird. Any Chelsea fans out there, let me know what you guys think. We have Desiree Doué. I don't know. 19-year-old left winger. PSG for 50 million. Was it Stade Rennes? I could be wrong, but the name looks familiar at least. Don't know much about him. We have Manuel Ugarte to Man United. Man United's just spending another 50 mil. Is he the answers to their midfield? Having seen the Casemiro disaster class against Liverpool, from a United perspective, you'd hope so. Then we have Joshua Zirkzee. I like this guy. I really like this guy. Very unique center forward. A typical Dutch player. Technically brilliant. Can really play anywhere in the attack. He can play even as an attacking midfielder, in my opinion. He can be a striker. You know, he does have, I guess, the pace to even be like a wide forward or something. Maybe not the explosiveness he'd probably need in that position. But I like him, man. I like him a lot. I just hope United don't waste him, because, yeah, he's a very unique center forward. Very, very unique center forward. Conor Gallagher to Atletico Madrid for 42 million. And Atleti have spent quite a lot of money this transfer window. I think it's kind of gone under the radar. And if they can get themselves together, hey, man, I haven't been impressed by Real Madrid. La Liga is really up for grabs. In my opinion, Ivan Toney just moved to the Saudi Pro League as well to get the bag. Bro, feed your family, fam. I don't blame you. If you're getting paid about 10 times as much as you were paid before, bro, do what you gotta do. Yeah, Mikel Merino to Arsenal for 32 million. Bro, I hate Arsenal so much. But what I hate more about them is they sign players I like. Like, that's the most frustrating part, bro. I like Mikel Merino. I'm sure at some point we're going to see Ricardo Calafiori as well. That's a player I would have loved to see play for any team I like. Just not Arsenal. But then, you know, Mikel Merino is a fantastic player, bro. Like, he can really play anywhere. He's one of those players. He can honestly really play anywhere. I wouldn't be surprised if we see this guy playing as an inverted left back at some point. Honestly, I would not be surprised. He can play as a defensive mid, a center mid, an attacking mid. He's physical. He's technical. That left foot is always a bonus. And for 32 million, that's a bargain in this market. Also experienced, 28 years old. What can we do? What can we do? We have Savinho looking like the next Mahrez at Man City for 25 million. Good signing. Good signing. I've only seen him in glimpses, but from what I have seen, he looks very technical, man. He looks very technical, and I hope Pep doesn't drain the Brazilian out of him, bro, and he just ends up being some robotic cutback merchant. Bro, can somebody save Jack Grealish from Manchester City, please? Somebody, anybody, anybody, please! Because that's one hell of a talent that's just been wasted over there. But anyway, up next we have Max Kilman, a 47.5 million euro move to West Ham. I didn't realize it costed them that much for Kilman. West Ham, another team who are going under the radar in terms of the business they have been doing. They have Julian Lopetegui now. And they are a team that I'm very much interested in to see where the season goes for them, because it can really go one of two ways. I don't think they can just be average. I think they're going to be very, very good and overperform, or it's going to be an utter failure. We have Jorginho Rutter, another player I really like, from Leeds to Brighton, I should say. 46.7 million euro signing. It was in the Championship. That must be one of the highest transfer fees ever for a Championship player. It must be. And Leeds really should have gotten promoted, man. Now all of their best players have basically been raided. But those are the top 25 transfers. I'm surprised that some of the transfers I would have thought would have made the top 25 didn't quite make it. Well, and this is one in 26th place, Ricardo Calafiori for 45 million euros to Arsenal. I like Calafiori. I like his versatility. I liked him at Bologna last season. One of their outstanding players. One of the outstanding players at the Euros as well for Italy. Because of course I watch Italy very closely because it is the national team I support. But Arsenal. Man, one thing I'll give to Arteta is him and I, we like the same kind of players. Unfortunately. But you know, that's where it ends. Yeah, that's where it ends. That's where the similarities end between me and him. Giorgio Mamardashvili, good signing for Liverpool for 30 million as well. He's only 23. He's a fantastic goalkeeper, man. And they loaned him back out to Valencia. So he's staying on Valencia on loan. They already have the long-term replacement for Alisson locked in. Maybe next season, Alisson goes to Saudi, gets the bag or something, and they have a top goalkeeper coming in for Liverpool. Just do smart business. You know, I know sometimes the Liverpool fans wish they did more business, but they do. They probably do the smartest business in the Premier League specifically. The smartest business. They could do more, but when they don't feel a need to do more, they don't. And they still are very much competitive. Ian Maatsen for 44.5 million euros from Chelsea to Aston Villa. Had a fantastic season over at Dortmund on loan from Chelsea. Haven't really seen much of him this season. And from what I've seen from Aston Villa, I haven't really been impressed, to be honest. And considering they'll be in the Champions League as well, I think they're going to have a very similar season to Newcastle last season, where they had this fantastic season the year before, and they just fall off. Because one, they're not used to that schedule of twice a week, every week. And with the new format in the Champions League, that's going to run up until like January. I think that's really going to get to them. And two, now the expectation that you're good. Because last season, you were the element of surprise. Yeah, people weren't expecting you to be as good as you were. And, you know, you caught guys off guard. But now people are like, okay, we've got to take them seriously now. You know, so we'll see how they manage. Funny enough, I think they may actually do better in the Champions League than Newcastle did. And I think they may do better in the Champions League than they inevitably do in the Premier League this season. Archie Gray for Tottenham, to Tottenham from Leeds for 41.25 million is one I like as well. I've seen him throughout preseason. He looks like a very good talent at 18 years old as well. He's very composed, man. He's very composed on the ball. He's very, well, he has the potential to be very physical. You know, he's very tall as well. He's still only 18, so he probably needs like maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe like 3 or 4 years actually, to fully grow into his body, you know, get a bit more physical in that midfield. But bro, we may have a long-term defensive midfielder in Archie Gray. Very, very excited. That's probably like my favorite signing for Tottenham this season is Archie Gray. He can also play at centre-back. We've seen him at full-back. Top, top talent. Elliot Anderson to Newcastle for 41.2 million. Can't really comment too much on that. William Pacho to PSG for 40 million. Bro, I don't know much about the Uber Eats League, okay? Is it still the, isn't it the McDonald's League now or something? Yo. Well, anyway. Robin Lenormant, 34.5 million to Atletico de Madrid. Another quite pricey signing there for Diego Simeone. Sehu Garassi to Dortmund from Stuttgart. Surprised that it's only 18 million because this guy was linked with some of the top Premier League teams last season because he had a very good season for Stuttgart. But now he's ended up going to Dortmund there for 18 million euros. Evan Nilsson, 37 million euros to Bournemouth. I guess he is the replacement for Dominic Solanke over there. Kieran Dewsbury-Hall, another Chelsea player, 35.4. Is he really going to play? We don't know. We don't know because they have like two 100 million pound midfielders. I guess he's just like a depth option or something like that. But anyway, Yankuba Minta to Brighton for 35 million. The guy is explosive, bro, right? I've seen Brighton a couple of times this season and mate, I am petrified for the day Tottenham play Brighton because this guy, he's going to run through us. He's 100% going to run through us with that highlight we play. But hey, seems like a very promising signing there. I wouldn't be surprised if in the next season or two he gets sold to Chelsea specifically for about 150 million euros. But, you know, it is what it is. Alessandro Buongiorno, Napoli, 35 million euros. I'll be watching Napoli very closely this season. I like Napoli. I wouldn't say I'm a Napoli fan, but I like Napoli. Mainly because of Kvitsa Kvaratskhelia. One of my favorite players. Probably my favorite player in the world right now, honestly speaking. Absolutely love him. And the fact that Antonio Conte is now the manager of Napoli. I want to see what he can do. He's also one of my favorite managers. You know, absolutely loved him when he was at Tottenham. Buongiorno. He must have been at Torino. I recall him being at Torino. I may be wrong, but we can confirm that in a second. Yes, he was at Torino from Torino to Napoli for 35 million. He's a good signing. I like him. I like him very much. David Raya, 31 million pound or 31.9 million euro move confirmed to Arsenal from Brentford. He was on loan last season. I guess they bought him permanently this season. Artem Dovbyk to Roma, one of the top goal scorers in La Liga. Going over to Roma. Roma have not had a good start to the season at all. Yeah, but we'll see if Daniele De Rossi can pick things up over there at the Stadio Olimpico. Joachim Anderson to Fulham for 29.5 million euros. A good signing for Fulham. Is the good move for him though, going from Palace? I think Palace are better than Fulham, bro. I think Palace and another team similar to West Ham who can surprise a few people this season. I think they can potentially compete for like the top eight. So seeing that he left Palace for me is quite interesting. Davide Fratesi, permanent move to Inter. We have Eli Wahi to Marseille for 25 million. This guy is still only 21. He was very highly rated a few seasons ago. He was at Lens. No, he was at Lens. Must be. Well, that's if that's how you pronounce it, mate. But I believe so. Alonso. Yeah. He even got sold for less than his market value. Yeah, there must be something going on there, bro. Because, yeah, this guy was very much highly rated a few seasons ago, linked with top, top clubs. And now, Marseille are a top club, but they're a top club in France, not in world football. Kefram Thuram to Juventus, one of the bargain moves of this transfer window, in my opinion, for 20.6 million euros, bro. And he contributes to what I'm saying Juventus should be looked out for, man. They are dangerous. He's probably the closest thing they've had in a while to Paul Pogba. Probably is. You know, very physical, very technical, carries the ball very, very well. He has good feet for a big guy. He's also like 6'4". 6'5", something ridiculous like that. Yeah, yeah. He's going to be an absolute unit in that midfield. And also them getting Kupmeiners and stuff. Bro, Juventus are going to be cooking. I can guarantee you that. Samu Omorodion. I'm convinced I pronounced that wrong. But Samu Omorodion to Porto. 50 million euros. Federico Chiesa. Oh, God. Federico Chiesa. I would do despicable things to have this guy play for my team. And seeing that Liverpool signed him for 12 million. 12 million euros, by the way, not even 12 million pounds. That's like, what, 9, 10 million pounds? Bro, for 9 or 10 million, fine, he's injury prone. But bro, even if, yeah, he gives you 20 games a season, Federico Chiesa on his day is unplayable, bro. He is. And that's the thing. They're signing him as a backup option. They still have Diaz. They have Salah. They have Gakpo. They have Jota. They have Nunez. I think I may be forgetting a few more. And on top of that, they just added Chiesa. Because why would you not, bro? Just why would you not for 12 million euros? Unbelievable signing. See what I mean by Liverpool does do smart business, man. Nico Gonzalez also joins Juventus on an 8.4 million euro loan fee. I wonder if that has an option to make the move permanent. I'm not too sure. Odilon Kosunu, I think it was at Leverkusen, to Atalanta, again on loan, 5 million loan fee. Raheem Sterling on loan to Arsenal, another loan move. Again, that's a smart move, man. Do I rate Sterling that highly? No. But he is a very experienced international who's won multiple league titles in the Premier League. And you're not bringing him in as your marquee signing or a starting player. He's just there. For example, if Saka's injured, he's just going to be that guy. Like, you bring him on in the last 20 minutes of a game. Or if Saka's injured or needs some rest, you bring him on. Or if you need a guy to play a League Cup game, you bring him in. Or having him as just like an option like that, it's very good business, man. It's very good business. I think his days for being the starting left winger at a top club are over. But again, him, Chiesa, as you know, those kind of signings, just being like your backup or like, you know, your emergency. He doesn't get much better than that. And then finally, we have Jean-Claire Todibo to West Ham on loan. Another smart move there for the Hammers, in my opinion. And those are the top 50 transfers of the 2024-2025 summer transfer window. Let me know which of those are your favorites. Let me know which are some of the smartest. What could have been done? I mean, some of them are a bit overpriced, aren't they? What has your club done? You know, what could have they done? Where could they have been involved? Because I'm looking at some of these and I'm hoping that my club could have been involved, but they never were. In this section, I just want to quickly go through the recent results and some of the results and games that have stood out to me in these early stages of the 2024-2025 season. Let's start things off in the Premier League. The Premier League table as it stands heading into the international break. We have Manchester City and Liverpool as the top two. That's a very familiar sight, with them being the only two teams to win their opening three games. And we have Liverpool being the only team yet to concede a goal. We have Manchester City having scored 9 goals. 7 of them have been Erling Haaland. Yes, 7 goals in 3 games. What can you do? We then have Brighton and Arsenal alongside Newcastle on 7 points. So 2 wins, 1 draw for them. That's because Brighton also drew with Arsenal this past weekend as well. Yeah, so they played each other and drew. We have Brentford on 6 points, Aston Villa on 6 points, Bournemouth, Forest on 5, Tottenham, Chelsea and Fulham on 4. West Ham and Man United on 3, winning 1 and both losing 2. Leicester on a point, Palace on a point, Ipswich and Wolves on a point. And at the bottom, we have recently promoted Southampton on 0, which is understandable. But they're not bottom. Bottom of the table, Everton Football Club. Now, people would normally want to start off by talking about Man City and Erling Haaland or Liverpool and how they dominated United. Bro, I'm here to talk about Everton first. Yeah? Because these guys genuinely concern me. Now, I'm a Tottenham fan. Right? I'm a Tottenham fan. Now, I'm not going to sit here and speak as if I know much about glory or I know much about success or anything like that, right? But I look at Everton and I'm like, how, right? Specifically the Evertonians, the Everton fans, how are you still involved, bro? How do you do this? What kind of mental strength do you guys have? Yeah. I learned a new word yesterday. Masochists. You must be masochists. Yeah. This is masochism, if that's what it's called. Because you just enjoy pain. That's what it is. People who enjoy pain, who are addicted to pain, are 100% masochists. And I command your loyalty. I command your commitment. Listen, people out there, if when somebody's loyal to you, I guess you get into a relationship with an Evertonian, because oh my goodness, these guys just keep coming back for more pain. Yeah. And I've been following Everton very closely over the past 4 seasons or so. And the theme has been the same. You head into every season trying not to get relegated. Now, I relate to that to a degree as a Tottenham fan, because we go into the season and I'm like, fam, we're just here. You know, we're just here, bro. I'm not expecting a trophy. I'm not expecting success. I'm just here. You know, what happens, happens, right? For them, they're just there to try not to die, essentially. It's like, I'm trying to survive. Yeah? Imagine living your life that way. Not trying to achieve anything. Just trying not to die. That's the life of an Evertonian. It's concerning. It's genuinely concerning. It's certainly concerning. But yeah, they are bottom of the table after a shocking result this past weekend where they were 2-0 up in the 87th minute. 2-0 up in the 87th minute. About 2.5 minutes away from stoppage time, you're leading by 2. Bro, you're chilling. Even if they pull one back, you're professional. You manage the situation, right? Oh, no, not Everton. They lost the game. They lost the game in about 9 minutes, conceding an average of a goal every 3 minutes in the last 9 minutes, and they lose the game to Bournemouth. You'd think that would happen against one of the top two. No. Bournemouth, who won the first game of the season that way. It's concerning, man. It's concerning. Listen, Evertonians out there, hang on to something. I don't know what, but hang on to something. At least, you know, Southampton have also not gotten a point. I guess you could hang on to that. But mate, they have been the worst team I've seen this season. I can't lie. They've been the worst team I've watched this season in the Premier League. Of course, another outstanding result was Liverpool smashing Man United 3-0 at Old Trafford and making it look easy, making it look like a training session. These men were all laying here, playing one-touch football, not in their own half, not in their final third, in United's box, where they have about 10 players behind the ball, and still, Mohamed Salah, yeah? Mohamed Salah with a new hairline, out here. Just, wow. Wow, looking better than ever. Honestly, that's probably the best I've seen him in a long, long time, bro. I'll be real. I'll be real. I wasn't really too impressed with him last season. This season, he's looking unbelievable, bro. incredibly effective. It's crazy. And Liverpool, for me, have been the best team in the Prem so far. They're the team I've been most impressed with. We'll get to like a predictions section where I predict who I think is going to win the league and stuff and who's going to get relegated and so on. But Liverpool are looking unbelievable. Another outstanding result was from game week 2 where Chelsea beat Wolves 6-2. And I think that result is a bit misleading, right? Firstly, because it was one of those days where everything they were hitting was just going in, right? Those days happen. Is it sustainable? No. Were Chelsea absolutely unbelievable? And can is that a performance they can build on? No, I don't think so. And I think that was evident in their performance against Crystal Palace and was evident in the fact that they lost in the Conference League during the week. Chelsea are very much hit and miss. And I guess we'll just see where they go. Brighton holding Arsenal at the Emirates this past weekend. And that's a very good result for them, a very poor result for Arsenal. And some Arsenal fans already worry that the season is over because they're now behind Man City. I mean, this is just literal PTSD, fam. These men are tormented. But yeah, a 1-1 draw there at the Emirates. And Manchester United. What's going on over there? Honestly. Because you do sign good players. You sign players I rate very highly. You have some players I rate very highly. I really rate Xerxes. I rate him very highly. I rate Matthijs de Ligt. I think those of both of those players have the potential to be world-class players, especially de Ligt. I think so. I like Kobbie Mainoo. I think you guys are overrating him a bit, but I like him. Right? I like Diogo Dalot. I like Mazraoui. You have a hologram in goal, which is fine. But I guess that's how your manager wants to play. He wants to play with a midfielder in goal who produces midfielder quality saves. Hey man, do what you gotta do. Pep does the same thing, but at least with them, they don't concede as many chances. Whereas with you, you're just open for business, mate. You're just there. Just spread wide open. Crazy. But for whatever reason, no matter how many players Manchester United sign, no matter how many world-class stars or top prospects they sign, for whatever reason, it just doesn't work. And fair enough, you can blame the manager or say it's on him to get the best out of the players, man, but it's been the trend for over a decade now. It's been the trend for over a decade. I'd honestly say the Jose period was the one where you could be like, okay, look at the squad he had. But apart from that, you have mostly had fantastic players or one of the best teams, one of the best squads, at least on paper. It's just been a case of reflecting it on the field, right? No matter what you think of these players, you can't tell me Matthijs de Ligt is not a good player. You can't tell me Diogo Dalot is not a good player. You can't tell me that in the right conditions, Kobbie Mainoo wouldn't thrive. You can't tell me under the right conditions, Bruno Fernandes. We've seen him bag multiple goals and assists now. Yeah, most of them are penalties and stuff. But again, under the right conditions, he can thrive. Be the condition is normally from 12 yards away. But, you know, Xerxes, good player. Garnacho, a good talent. I think they've missed the boat on Sancho, man. He's a very good talent. Of course, there's the whole Greenwood situation where they did what they believed they had to do. But where do you go now is my thing. Like, if this season is basically just like last season where you're sometimes good, you're sometimes not, you're getting embarrassed, and you may win the Carabao Cup, but you finish ninth. Now what? Like, is that acceptable? I'm genuinely wondering to United fans out there, is that acceptable? Because The only win they have is against Fulham, and it was at home, and it was a 1-0. And it's not like they dominated and outplayed Fulham. It was on opening day. You won 1-0. You're at home. Cheers. But then after that, you lost to Brighton and to Liverpool. Like, you lost to the only decent team you played, and you got smashed by the only good team you've played. You know what I'm saying? Where exactly are you then? You know? That's quite concerning. That's quite concerning. Now let's move over to Serie A, the top division in Italy. And personally, my favorite league to watch. On top of the table, we have Inter, Juventus, then Torino, Udinese, with all four teams having 7 points, meaning no team has won three out of their opening three games. Inter dropped points in their opening game against Genoa in a 2-2 draw away from home. And Juventus just dropped points yesterday at home to Roma in a goalless draw. So Juve still have not conceded a goal as of yet. And for me, they've been the most impressive team so far this season. And on the contrary, the most disappointing team for me have been AS Roma, who are currently in 17th place, winless, 2 draws, and a loss. And it's not like they've played the toughest of opponents. Yes, Juve was the toughest game they've had, but that was a draw. It's not like they lost that. I think they lost against Cagliari. Am I wrong in saying that? We're just going to check that in a second. You know, no, they drew against Cagliari. They actually lost to Empoli. Oh, yeah. 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 And in 3 games, Roma have only scored 1 goal. Wow. Wow. That's looking shocking, mate. 0-0 draw on opening day away from home. Lost at home to Empoli and then drew away to Juventus. That must not be fun for any Romanisti out there. They're looking disappointing. But of course, Bologna are a Champions League team, but they're currently in 18th. Yeah, they're going to have a shocking season, mate. I wouldn't be shocked if they are contending in the relegation zone come the end of the season, but be in the Champions League because they got absolutely raided of their best players. And yeah, to be fair, AC Milan, they haven't been too impressive either. Just had a 2-2 draw against Lazio. I guess you could say they showed something in that game. But yeah, they have not been too impressive. They also drew against Torino. To be fair, Torino have looked decent this season and they are up there in the table. But yeah, Milan, I'll give them the grace that they've had a difficult start to the season. Of course, the most disappointing result was the loss away at Parma. But a draw against Lazio and a draw against Torino, well, it depends on what your ambitions are, right? If your ambitions are to be a top four team, which I believe they should be, because I don't think Milan is on the same level as Inter or Juve. I think they're on the next level. I think Inter and Juve are there. Then we can have Milan, Napoli, Atalanta, you know, after that. So if the ambition is to get into the top four, then fine. It's not the worst start in the world, considering the teams that we've played. But if you want to try to compete for the league, then nah. And I'm not one of these fans that's like, nah, because it's Milan, we should be trying to win the league every season. I'm realistic, fam. It's not happening, okay? It's just not happening. New manager, Paolo Fonseca, has he even won a league title of note? I don't know. He's more of the play beautiful football and be entertaining than do what it takes to win kind of manager, which I'm not really a fan of. But again, it's a case of it's only been 3 games. Let's give him some time and, you know, see what he may conjure up. Now let's go over to the Bundesliga. Yeah. Germany. What are we cooking over there? Yeah. Most outstanding result will definitely be the fact that Bayer Leverkusen just lost their first game in what, like 35, right? They lost at home to RB Leipzig after being 2 goals up. So they got Leverkusen'd in a way, yeah, where It's been a case of them doing comebacks late on throughout the whole of last season, but yeah, they kind of got a taste of their own medicine here, losing 3-2 at home on Saturday to RB Leipzig. I think Leverkusen are still going to be up there for the league. They didn't really lose any of their big players, whereas normally when a team has such an outstanding season, they normally get raided. That didn't happen with them. That didn't happen. They didn't even lose their manager. So they are definitely planning on building on what they have and not just it being a case of you won the league and then you went on and disappeared. Borussia Dortmund had a good opening day win against Eintracht Frankfurt 2-0 at the Westfalenstadion. That was a good result for them. Unfortunately, they now just drew with Werder Bremen on Saturday. Again, I don't know what really to expect for them. The Bundesliga, for me, may be the most open league in Europe, or like the most open top league in Europe, where Leverkusen could potentially win the league. Bayern could win the league. Leipzig could if they got themselves together. And there's Dortmund, who are always in the conversation, but will most likely slip up at the end, right? But as of now, let's actually look up the standings here as it stands, because I haven't had that look in a while. They've only played two games. We have Heidenheim top, Bayern, and then Leipzig, those three winning both two games, and then Dortmund on 4 points, Union Berlin on four, a load of teams on 3 points. And I guess Stuttgart is the one that looks a bit weird, considering they'll be in the Champions League. They've lost one and won one, but again, it's only been two games, so there's not much to take from this. Leverkusen have won one, lost one as well. But yeah, man, Bayern, Leipzig, Dortmund, Leverkusen, I think any of those four could actually win the league. It's just a case of who sorts themselves out first and stays consistent with it. And yeah, it should really be taken from there. Moving over to La Liga. And the topic right now is Real Madrid finally getting a win yesterday, actually, here against Real Betis. I'm only seeing it now. When I stopped watching, it was still 0-0. But good to see the Madridistas, yeah, Los Blancos, finally getting involved. Four games played in La Liga. Top of the table, Barcelona. Yeah, they've looked unbelievable, bro. They've looked real serious. Madrid, 8 points. We have Atleti on eight, Villarreal on eight, some teams on seven, and all the way at the bottom, we have Valencia. Is this where we are again? Yeah? Is this where we are with Valencia? That's in the top division of Spain. Valencia is a team I look out for. I like the Mestalla. And they were in a relegation battle a few years ago that they survived just about. Seems like them and Sevilla are going to be involved once again. Neither team having a win in their opening four games. Three losses for Valencia, only on 1 point. And Sevilla, two draws and two losses. Not much better either for them. Barcelona, however, have been the outstanding team, considering that 7-0 drubbing of Real Valladolid just 2 days ago. And yeah, that really put a marker down on some. Yeah, Barca are here to play ball, you know, and with Madrid kind of struggling at the moment. Yeah, they could really run away with this. They could really run away with this. But then we'll see. I'll say, you know, still very early on in the season, still very early on. But from what I've seen, they've been the most impressive team. Atleti, for me, have been more impressive than actually Real Madrid, right? But again, it's still early, man. Once Madrid kick into gear and they sort out that whole attack, how they integrate Mbappe and, you know, the other attackers that they already have, if they can sort that out, then they can definitely just get like 20 wins in a row. I wouldn't be surprised. But that is yet to happen. So we will see. I'll just briefly touch on the McDonald's League. Is it officially the McDonald's League? I should actually look that up, right? Because I thought it was the Uber Eats, but then I remember seeing something that they were now going to be sponsored by. Yeah, it is. Ligue 1 McDonald's. The McDonald's League. Interesting. Very interesting. Wow. What's happening in the McDonald's League, also known as the PSG League? Oh, would you look at that? Paris Saint-Germain, top of the table. Whatever. That's about the extent that I'm going to go into it. Okay, Marseille are in second. And, well, the top goal scorer, actually, is currently Mason Greenwood. Would you look at that? But yeah, you guys let me know what you think about the start to this season. What have been the most outstanding results and teams to look out for, especially in the leagues that you guys follow? Because I don't follow all of the leagues, right? I'd say the leagues I follow most are Premier League and Serie A. I look out for the Bundesliga. Not much of a La Liga fan, to be honest. I just look out for like the big games in La Liga, and Ligue 1 is just there. It's just there. Now, I just want to quickly go through some season predictions throughout the top leagues and European competitions. Now, I'm not going to be going through every single team and predicting the whole league from first to last. No, I'm just going to predict it in groups. Firstly, who I think will be competing for the title, or who I think will win the title, who I think will be competing for Europe, who I think will just be in mid-table, and who I think will be competing for relegation, or in a few cases, who I definitely believe will be going down. Now we're going to start off with the Premier League here. And I think only three teams are going to be in the title race, right? I think it's going to be Manchester City, Liverpool, and Arsenal. Now, I know I said the team that I've been most impressed with in the Premier League so far is Liverpool, but I actually don't think they're going to win the league. I think it's still going to be Man City, who would then make it, what, five league titles in a row or something. Yeah, bro. The myth that the Premier League is the most competitive league in the world is just that. A myth. Erling Haaland already on 7 goals in 3 games. He's scoring more than 2 goals per game right now. And what are we doing? They haven't even hit full year yet. Liverpool have been very impressive. I don't think it's going to be a case of a team getting more than 90 points. I don't think so. I think at most 90 will win the league, because I believe those three teams, City, Liverpool, and Arsenal, are going to take points from each other as well. In terms of Arsenal, they've been okay, but I haven't been that impressed. They could have easily dropped points against Aston Villa, but they didn't, and then they paid for it against Brighton. I didn't see the opening game though, but I saw the Villa game and I saw the Brighton game. Yeah, they, out of the three, have been the ones that have been a bit lacking, or they have a red card in their situation. We don't know how that's going to go, but I still believe they'll be up there. I believe City will finish first, Liverpool second, and Arsenal third. But it won't be too much in it or anything like that. Then in terms of European competitions, I actually got it written down here. In terms of which teams I believe will be competing in Europe, I think Newcastle United, considering that they won't be in Europe this season like they were last season, they're going to have time to focus on domestic competitions. I think they'll be competing for European competitions. I think Tottenham Hotspur, they'll just about do enough to be there. I don't think they'll make it to the Champions League though, to be honest. Probably like 6th, 7th, something like that. Chelsea have the potential to. Well, firstly, if they can figure out who plays for them. Secondly, if they can figure out a starting 11. And then if they can actually stick to a working plan, they can kick in gear and compete for Europe. Man United are in a similar situation to Chelsea where it's very inconsistent. They may turn up, they may not. You never know. But I think just based on the individual quality they have in their team, they may get like 7th or something. But honestly, they're the ones I doubt most out of this group that they'll actually make it into Europe. And then the last team, I was kind of caught between 3 teams, right? I was caught between Brighton, Crystal Palace, and West Ham, because I think those 3 teams have the potential, like if their players stay fit, because they've made some good signings. I like the transfer window that West Ham have had. I like how Crystal Palace finished last season, and I like the signings they've made, especially considering that they were able to keep a hold of Eze. They have lost Alisa, but they've made some good signings. So if things click for Palace, they'll definitely be competing for Europe. And Brighton have had a fantastic start to this season, and they look very promising. And they're always a threat. Again, they were in Europe last season. I think they'll be looking to get back in there. Now, teams who I think are just going to be in mid-table for me are Fulham, Forest, Bournemouth, Brentford, and Aston Villa. That may be the big one there, because they're a Champions League team as we speak. And I think they're going to have a very similar season to what Newcastle had. I will say, though, I think they're a bit more prepared for this season than Newcastle were for last season because of the transfers they have made. They signed a lot of players. They haven't lost many of their big players. The few that they've lost, they've replaced. So they're definitely more prepared. But I think the schedule of playing twice a week, especially with the new format of the Champions League, basically playing twice a week until January, is something most of those players would not have been used to. Right? That expectation as well. Because now you're not the surprise package anymore. You know, people are looking out for you. They know you are actually decent and they're going to be more prepared. They're going to take you more seriously. There's pressure on you as well to be a favorite in certain matches where you weren't a favorite in last season. And I think that may get to them in the league. I do believe they may actually surprise some people in the Champions League, though, just because of Unai Emery and how well he usually does in Europe. Even with Villarreal, he got them to like a Champions League semi-final, I believe. He can definitely do something and upset a few big teams in the Champions League. But as for the league, I don't think it's really going to happen for them. And the teams who I believe will be in a relegation battle are Leicester City, Ipswich, Wolves, who have looked underwhelming. They looked like they had something against Chelsea, although they lost 6-2 at the end of the day. But yeah, they haven't been good at all. And then, of course, we have Southampton and Everton, who currently occupy the bottom two slots. And Everton are here once again predicted to be in a relegation battle. But you can't really blame anybody for predicting they're going to be in a relegation battle if you've just watched them this season. Thing is, with Everton, their strength has been their defense throughout last season. You know, they don't have many goal threats. And they don't create many chances, right? But one thing is, they don't concede many goals, or that had been the thing. It's been different this season. They're conceding a lot of goals. They've conceded the most goals in the league, conceded 10 in 3. 3-0 against Brighton, 4-0 against Tottenham, and now 3-2 against Bournemouth. So the only thing that they had going for them, which was their defense, is now gone, right? And they're still not scoring as much. Yeah, I know they don't have Jared Brathwaite currently fit, but I don't think he changes that much where it can go from them losing 4-0 to winning a game. I think like the 4-0, if Jared Brathwaite is there, maybe as a 2-0 or a 1-0, right? Maybe the 3-0 against Brighton is a 1-0, right? Or a 2-1 or something like that. But my point is, I don't think him being the only difference in the defense makes such a massive impact. And they've honestly been the worst looking team in the league from what I have seen. And I'll just say this, I think they are definitely going down. If I were to pick a three that I think are going down, I'd say Everton, Southampton, and Ipswich. I'd say those three. Yeah, I'd say definitely Everton and Southampton. And then, yeah, I'd say Ipswich as well would be going down, in my opinion. We're going to move over to La Liga there, and my predictions that side, of course, it's obvious the top three who will be in a title race, Barca, Madrid, and Atleti. I think Barca may have enough to win it. Thing is, it can go either way, man, because these teams are all good. I'm very much liking the business that Atleti did. They spent a lot of money. They made a lot of big business there. For them to win the league against just the squad Real Madrid have would be a fantastic achievement for Diego Simeone. I think it's possible, just because Madrid haven't clicked. The problem, though, is Madrid, out of the three, have the highest potential, in my opinion, because if they click, they can go on and win 20, 25 games in a row easily, right? It's just the case of integrating Mbappe into their attack and finding that balance where, you know, they don't lose the qualities of the other players and they get the best out of him. I guess that's the trick. But once they get that, yeah, man, I don't think Barca or Atleti would be able to catch up with them. But I, as of now, if I were to make a prediction, I'd say Barca can win this league, man. If I were to have to put money on it, I'd say Barcelona win it. And then the question really is, when do Madrid click? But yeah, I don't think there's going to be much in it, though. I don't think there's going to be much in it. I think both the Madrid teams finish second and third and not too much in between them. Teams that I think will be competing for Europe include Villarreal, Athletic Club, Sociedad, and Girona. Although they're in the Champions League, I think they have enough about them to still be competitive for European competitions in the league. Because I don't think they're going to do well in the Champions League at all. I think they're going to go out early. I think they're going to go out in the league phase. I think they're going to do pretty poorly. And I think they'll be knocked out. I could be wrong. I could be surprised, right? But yeah, I think they're just going to be there to get as much of the revenue from those league games as possible, bow out and make sure they are back in Europe again for next season would be my prediction. Teams for me that will be just in the mid-table are Alaves, Osasuna, Betis, Getafe, Sevilla, although they've had an awful start to the season. I think they'll find themselves Celta, Mallorca, and Rayo Vallecano. And teams I believe will be in the relegation battle are Las Palmas, Leganes, Espanyol, Real Valladolid, and unfortunately, Valencia. Yeah, Valencia currently bottom. Like I said, I think Sevilla will find their feet eventually. I think Valencia will not get relegated, but they'll definitely be in a battle towards the end unless like a managerial change happens and something, you know, spectacular happens in that camp. But yeah, as of now, I think they're going to be down there as one of the worst teams in La Liga. Going over to Germany, I think I've hinted at this one already, that I think four teams will be competing for the Bundesliga. That'd be the current champions, Bayer Leverkusen, the former champions, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, and RB Leipzig. If I had to pick a winner right now, based on who I'm most impressed with, who I think can maintain the challenge, it's difficult. I've been most impressed by RB Leipzig. Honestly. I've been most impressed by RB Leipzig. But I think Bayern Munich have that potential about them, similarly to Madrid. Once it clicks with the players they have, no team here should really be competing with them. Right? With the new additions, they finally switched out their midfield with Palinha going in there. They still have Harry Kane. They have Leroy Sane. They've added Mikel Olise. You know, they have a very star-studded team. It's just a case of can Vincent Kompany get the best out of them and it click consistently? You know, they've won the first two games, but there's still room to improve. But just for their experience, I'm going to have to give it to Bayern Munich. But yeah, I don't think there's going to be much in it. Leipzig will definitely be close by. So will Leverkusen and Dortmund. In terms of teams competing for European places, I think Eintracht Frankfurt will be involved. Borussia Mönchengladbach, Heidenheim, Stuttgart, and Hoffenheim. And then for the mid-table teams, I think it'll be Mainz, Werder Bremen, Freiburg, Wolfsburg, and Union Berlin. And down in the relegation places, definitely Bochum, St. Pauli, Holstein Kiel, and Augsburg. Not too sure who exactly will be relegated, but I think any of those will be definitely going down. Now moving over to Serie A, we just went from the league which I believe will have the most competitive title race to the one which I think won't, because I think there are only two teams in this, that being the current champions Internazionale and Juventus. Juventus definitely been the one that have impressed me the most. Inter are still a phenomenal team, have not lost any of their key players, and they'll just continue to go from strength to strength. So those two teams are going to be up there. So the Derby d'Italia is going to be unbelievable, because I believe those will be the two best teams in Italy. I think they currently are right now. Who do I think will take the title? Man, I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a point or two in this at the end. You have to look at the managers in this situation, in my opinion. You have to look at the managers where Inzaghi has won the league. He's currently defending the league, right? So there's that experience in those big, tight games. Can he get it over the line? He's been to a Champions League final as well. Whereas Thiago Motta is a much younger manager. He hasn't really experienced those kind of high-pressure situations. Although some of the Juventus players would have experienced them, he as a manager hasn't. And maybe those big calls and big games, maybe the fine margins where the title is decided. So I guess based on that, I'd have to say Inter. Inter could win it. But man, Juventus look so impressive, man. They look so impressive. It can really go either way for me. In terms of teams competing for Europe, I think Napoli will be back in Europe, especially because they don't have European competitions to worry about. Antonio Conte will make sure they get back in Europe, maybe even back into the Champions League. I would not be surprised. Milan, although not a great start to the season, I think it's because it's been a difficult start, but I think we'll be back within the European competitions. Champions League, maybe, because there aren't that many out-and-out amazing teams who are favorites for the Champions League either way, right? Napoli are a prospect as well. Roma have been awful in the beginning of the season, so there aren't many great teams. I don't think the Italian teams are going to do too well in Europe apart from Inter and Juventus, so most of them will definitely be competing in the league. I also think up there will be Torino, will be Atalanta and Lazio. I actually think Roma won't be competing for European places unless they change a manager and something, you know, happens for them, because they're not looking good at all. They've only scored one goal in three games, for example. Not great. They're currently in 17th place, and I think they are part of the mid-table fodder, unfortunately, there for the Giallorossi. So they'll be down there. Udinese, Fiorentina, Empoli, Genoa, Lecce and Verona, I think, will just be in mid-table, not really doing anything too impressive. And fighting relegation for me will be Como, Venezia, Bologna. I think are going to be a Champions League team that are fighting relegation in their own country. We may see some spectacular stuff here, because yeah, they are nothing like the team they were last season, which is understandable. Losing the manager, losing so many of their key players, it was inevitable. But yeah, it's not been good for them. Cagliari, Parma and Monza, I think, will also be down there fighting relegation. I think Como are just going back straight down, in my opinion. I think Como will definitely get relegated. I think Venezia will definitely get relegated. And will Bologna have just about enough quality? I mean, they're a Champions League team, right? Will they have just about enough quality to survive? Maybe. So maybe we're looking at Cagliari to maybe go down. But we will see. And then as for the McDonald's League, and I mean no disrespect, it's just what you're called now. It's just PSG, isn't it? It's just PSG. Three games played. 13 goals scored. Yeah, 13, bro. Averaging more than 4 goals a game. What can we do? What can we do? The only team to win 3 out of 3. They're just going to win the league, aren't they? Marseille may be involved and try to make it interesting. But mate, I'm not really that bothered to go through this league. Because for one, I don't follow it that closely. And I'd just be lying. But one thing's for sure, PSG are going to win the league. And now let's look at the Champions League. Of course, there's a new format, and most people, including myself in the beginning at least, found it a bit confusing as to how exactly it's going to work. And to those who may still not quite know, it's now in league format, and it has adapted like a playoff style competition similar to what you'd see like in the NBA or something like that. So this will be the 17th season of Europe's elite club competition, and the 33rd since it was renamed the UEFA Champions League, as well as the first under the new format. It kicks off the 9th of July. Those are like qualifiers and stuff, and the final is on the 31st of May 2025, right? So what is the new Champions League format? The biggest change is to the group stage. That's basically no longer there, right? So there are 36 teams and they'll be competing in a league, right? Each side faces 8 different teams. So there isn't a case of, you know, in the group where you had 6 games, you know, 3 at home, 3 away, you know, and then top of the group, you go through and stuff like that. No, now you play 8 games. You play each team once, right? But out of the 8 games you play, 4 of them will be at home, 4 of them will be away. I think it makes the home and away factor more important, because there isn't a case of, now I can just go away and get a draw and then we'll beat them at home, because you're not going to see that team again in the league form, right? You only play it once. And after that happens, after each team plays its 8 games, the 4 home, 4 away, the top 8 in the league overall advance directly to the round of 16, right? So whoever finishes in the top 8 within that 36-team league goes straight to the round of 16. And then the sides finishing from 9th to 24th. So the next 16 teams play in like a playoff thing. They call it knockout rounds. So it's a playoff where it's going to be a 2-legged playoff. And of course, it's 16 teams. 8 of them are going to go through. 8 of them are going to get knocked out. And then of the 8 that go through, they'll face the 8 that finished in the top 8, which will be waiting for them in the round of 16. It may sound a bit confusing, but I think for some people, it's just the case of you'll just see how it goes. It's definitely more exciting because you're going to see different games. You're not going to see the same game twice, like I said. It should make for some big, big encounters. Now, the first round of games is in 2 weeks' time. Of course, it's the international break right now, so the 17th of September, and the biggest game out of that is definitely AC Milan hosting Liverpool. Two giants of world football there. Yeah, I think Milan have won the Champions League 7 times. Liverpool have won it 6 times. Milan, with their 7 Champions League trophies, are in second place, only behind Real Madrid and Liverpool. I believe maybe tied with Bayern Munich in third, or they're outright third. I'm not sure, but that's definitely the outstanding game of that day. Then on Wednesday, we have some games. I mean, we have Man City against Inter on the 18th. At City, so at the Etihad, that's going to be another big game, a repeat of the Champions League final of 2 seasons ago. Then on Thursday, we have Feyenoord by Leverkusen. Okay, that should be somewhat interesting. Atleti and Leipzig. That could be just like 2 completely different styles of football there that will be clashing. We have Atalanta and Arsenal, and Arsenal are going away to Atalanta. Yeah, they have something coming, bro. Nobody likes to play Atalanta in their stadium. That's not going to be an easy game for Arsenal at all. But yeah, there are some pretty big games, man. Leverkusen facing Milan, again, it's going to be big. Arsenal facing PSG the next week. That's going to be another massive game there that, you know, should be interesting to see how it plays out. We have Madrid, they'll be hosting Dortmund, so a repeat of last season's Champions League final. Leipzig against Liverpool should be an interesting game. So the point here is there are more bigger games, right? I mean, the 1st of November, we have Real Madrid against AC Milan. I'm not going to go through all of them, right? But that's just to give you guys an idea of how big these games are going to be. I wouldn't be surprised if one of these games is going to be the Champions League final, right? I wouldn't be surprised, like Man City against Inter, if that ends up being the Champions League final, or Liverpool against Bayer Leverkusen, if that ends up being the Champions League final. They are going to play in the league phase as well, right? But that just goes to show that they're going to be more varied fixtures, and it's very, very excited. Now, who do I think is going to win the Champions League? I think Liverpool are up there. Now, of course, Real Madrid are the conversation, right? But if I were to pick a team, I think Liverpool are set up perfectly to win the Champions League. Now, they have some tough fixtures, but I think they'll be in the conversation, right? If I had to pick my favorites, of course, it's Madrid, right? But they'll be there. Of course, City will be there. I actually think Juve could surprise some people in the Champions League. I think Juventus can surprise some people. Bayern Munich, I don't know, man. I just don't know. I honestly just don't know, because they need to click for it to work, okay? They need to click for it to work. Madrid don't need to click for it to work because they have their Champions League juju going for them. Yeah, some questionable stuff there. And they just managed to do it somehow. But yeah, If I were to pick a winner, I think Liverpool are going to get it done in the Champions League. Because, man, they've just been so impressive. And the thing is with them, they are so explosive on counterattacks and stuff that they are always a threat to score a goal in any situation. And I think they are one of the few teams, maybe Madrid as well, but they are one of the few teams where if they come up against City and City are playing their football and they're keeping possession, bro, Liverpool are still a threat. Right. If they come up against Arsenal, they're still going to be a threat. Juventus are going to play more possession-based football. If they come up against Liverpool, it's going to be a long day for them, you know? Whereas I think the other top teams, because of their style, they may not be as much of a threat at any point in the game as Liverpool would be. So I'd say really and truly look out for them for the Champions League. Now, of course, the Europa League and the Conference League will be adopting a similar format as well. I'm not going to go through all of those now. We'll discuss them in more detail in future episodes to come. I just wanted to get like my predictions out there for what I think is going to happen in the most relevant competitions in European football. But you guys let me know in the comments as well. What you guys think? Who do you think is going to win all five top leagues? What do you agree with? What do you disagree with? Who do you think is going to win the Champions League? Have I gotten my predictions spot on or am I a bit of a fraud? Don't hesitate to call me out on what I am saying either. In terms of Spotify, bro, I'll be honest. Did you even leave a comment on Spotify? I have no idea. Yeah, maybe share it. Let me know. Get in touch if you can. Well, you'll be the first person. See if I can comment on Spotify or something. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that. I'll also be launching fan cams on the channel, only on YouTube, though not on Spotify, from all kinds of fans. I announced this in the community section in my post yesterday. We'll be actually going out there in the world and getting your guys' thoughts, yeah, on your teams, on what you think is going to happen, on your predictions, on the current state of your individual football clubs. And for me also to get an idea of how other fans of other clubs see the game, of their current state of the team, of what their ambitions are, so on and so forth. So I want to get in touch with as many of you guys as possible. I'm very excited about this and I hope you guys are as well. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast yet today. We'll be back next week. But throughout the week, make sure to check out the Quickie Crusher YouTube channel. The link will be where it should. Description of everything. Yeah, click the link, get involved, look out. We'll be bringing out fan cams, like I said, podcast weekly on Mondays. There'll be shorts going up, all kinds of good stuff. But for now, though, I'll see you guys next time.